Welcome to another episode of the Moncton Wildcast Podcast, live from Wildcast Studios, with your hosts, Adam Lund, Chris Thompson, and Jeremy Boucher.
Oh, welcome into another episode of the Moncton Wildcast Podcast, presented by Roads to Sea Tours, your unofficial voice of all things Moncton Wildcats, mixed in with a little bit of QMJHL, but a lot of humor. Here we go, Boucher, second last episode. We can see the end.
Yeah, I just need a vacation right now.
One more week. Just give me one more week. This one and one more week.
All right, I can do that.
All right.
Don't extend me anymore.
I promise I'll get you something nice next week.
I'm not showing up the first week of July.
No, I'm not either because my parents are going to be here. But there's no Chris tonight, but we are not alone. We are joined by a very special guest. He's the main voice of the Moncton Wildcats from the Times and Transcript, Neil Hodge, who's been covering the team. I thought you'd been covering the team basically since I've been here, which is 2 years. But... Day one of the Moncton franchises.
Yeah, since 1995-96, when they started the first season as the Moncton Alpines, and then after one season changed their name over to Moncton Wildcats once Robert Irving purchased the franchise and changed the name. They just kind of, I'm kind of like furniture, I guess they just dust me off each season.
You're just so good, they keep bringing you back.
Yeah. quite a few bus miles over the years.
Yeah, like you're at every game, right?
Yes, yeah, all... Every game, home and away, from training camp right onward. Every preseason game, every regular season game, all playoff games. My summer basically ends on August the 14th or 15th, whatever day training camp begins. Hmm. And I'm at the rink from then on. And I've had Wildcats coaches over the years tell me they see more of me than they do their wives. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
I was just going to say, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm sure you've seen... like countless things. We're going to get into it a little bit later, but first we're going to keep up with the Bouchers.
So pretty funny one. My wife and I, we don't have daycare. So I looked after our daughter in the morning. Megan looks after her in the afternoon. So last Friday, she's 4 years. She's almost 4 years old. So I can take my eye off her periodically. But I just happened to look over at her.
I feel like you can't.
No. I just happened to look over for 1 minute last Friday morning, and she's in the fridge chugging a bottle of maple syrup.
Oh. How Canadian is that?
Yeah. So she was pretty hyped up that day, and yeah. I had to take her outside for most of the day, so she wasn't...
Really?
Yeah. It was one of those kind of those mini bottles there, sizes. So she just chugged it right back.
I bet your wife was thrilled with you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had to go to work in the afternoon, so my wife is stuck with her. So I kind of got the good end of the stick on that deal.
You're like, all right, see you later. So the quick question for you guys. Of course, NHL draft is this weekend. Two of our guys, Peltz and Spence, are there. I'll ask you guys, where do you think the top Q players ranked are going to be drafted between Raphael Lavoie, Samuel Poulin, and of course Pelche and Spence?
I mean, I'll be surprised if Montreal doesn't take Lavoie. He's kind of in that spot where I think Montreal drafts 14th or 15th. And
15th,
that's,
yeah.
15th, that's kind of where Lavoie is expected to go. Trevor Timmins is known to be kind of in favor of Europeans or... even NCAA guys. So in terms of a fan reaction, and it would be great if they actually took Lavoie. But, again, wouldn't be surprised if they go somewhere else.
Yeah, well, Montreal certainly needs that big power forward down the middle. The only thing that works against him going to Montreal is Montreal's added so much depth at center the last couple of years. Having said that, you can always trade from a position of strength.
Right,
so
exactly.
He never have too many centers or too many defensemen, they say, right? So.
And he'll probably start on the wing, if anything, if he's going to make that. But between Poulin and Peltz, and obviously we're biased, who do you think goes first in between those two players? Because they went 2-3 in the Q draft, so.
I think, personally, probably Lavoie will go first, because I think it's still a big man's game. I mean, there are a lot more small, skilled guys in the league, in the NHL now, making their way and having an impact. But I think if two guys are fairly equal, I still think at the end of the day, teams will go with size. Mm-hmm. It's a safer bet.
Yeah, and he showed up in the Memorial Cup and the playoffs.
Playoffs.
I mean, he had a little extra time there, but...
Yeah, the playoffs really helped his stock a lot. I mean, unfortunately for Peltier, he was hurt and played hurt, probably played at half capacity throughout the playoffs, so... Or this, throughout the... Well, really, the whole playoffs.
Yeah. He
got injured early in the first round against Baycomo.
Yeah, game one.
Yeah.
We never really had a healthy lineup until game four of the Halifax series.
Yeah, exactly.
That was it. Like,
it was, anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Yeah, Moncton really wasn't able to ice the team that they could have had. I'm not saying they would have beaten Halifax, but I think they could have given Halifax a better run for their money. And maybe turned it into a six-game series, perhaps. But they just didn't have they didn't have everybody at full health, and they would have needed everything to go their way in that series. I mean, if you look at it, Moncton played Halifax 13 times.
Yeah.
11 of them were... losses by two goals or less.
Yeah, and so, with a lot healthier rosters.
Yeah, yeah. So they really needed everything to go their way.
And health-wise, they might not have gone seven against Baycomo.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know if we'd have had a full, complete, healthy roster. Spence is a round two pick or round three? I saw him going 37, I think. Midway through the second to the Islanders. That's the highest I've seen him.
Yeah. Bob McKenzie had him 74, which would make him a mid-third round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see him going early third round because he's kind of that new generation defenseman. Palche, he's either going to be one of the last picks Friday night or one of the first picks Saturday morning.
Yeah.
It's just, Tampa picks late in the first round. They love their Quebec players. Could be a spot for him. You know, the small forward from Quebec, they've got a ton of those already. Maybe I'm biased here. I'd love to see him with Calgary.
I would not. I saw that in a mock draft. I was like,
yeah, that was pretty exciting. I saw that. But, you know, it's if he's a first-round pick, he deserves it. But I think he's – personally, I think he goes one of the first three picks on Saturday morning.
And like you said 3 weeks ago when we talked about it, Detroit, they like their key players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and I think they picked like 34th.
Yeah, they got a couple early picks in the second round, so – could be another spot for him.
I think Peltier will go late first round, early second round, like you. I think that's general consensus. A lot of people think that. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to the Islanders. I know that's a Hockey News mock draft right now, but that one seems to make sense to me. They like their solid two-way, non-flashy type forwards.
Yeah.
And he seems to fit the Barry Trotz mold. Smart, heady, two-way player. High energy.
Yeah, for sure.
And
they pick 23rd right now. So.
Yeah. So I could see him going the latter part of the first round. As far as Spence goes, you know what? That's going to be an interesting situation. If you look at a guy like Brent Burns in San Jose, he went from high school hockey one season, junior hockey the next season, NHL the next. Within a span of 3 years, I think he went from high school hockey to the NHL.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And his game grew by leaps and bounds in crazy fashion.
As a forward, too, didn't he?
Yes.
He started as a forward.
And there's some scouts that I've spoken to who compare, not necessarily in terms of style of play, but compare the quick progression of Jordan Spence to the quick progression of Brent Burns that he made back then. And they believe, if you talk to people, that, you know, they'll tell you that... Jordan Spence was an average defenseman in that New Brunswick PEI Midget AAA Hockey League. He went from there one season as an average defenseman in Midget AAA to a star defenseman the next season in Junior A with Summerside Western Capitals to a star defenseman in Junior A, or in Major Junior. So they're saying that with the progression that he's making and that new breed of defenseman nowadays, that he fits that mold, what's his ceiling? What's his potential? And that's why some people are saying he may go from the third round up to the second round, because people are fascinated by what his potential may be. Is he another Brent Burns? I don't necessarily mean style of play, but just in terms of that growth factor that he has in his game.
That's not the worst person you could
pick.
And I said when we talked about these guys earlier, I mean, I saw him going to a spot like Nashville, like Ryan Ellis. But when I mentioned to you about the Islanders, him and Noah Dobson playing together... in the future.
Yeah.
Plus, you can learn from him being a PEI guy.
Yeah.
I mean, they could take both Wildcats.
Yeah.
The Islanders could take Peltier in round one and Spence in round two.
Look at a guy like Torrey Krug in Boston. I mean, he's
a
small, skilled defenseman, move the puck, skate like the wind.
Charlie McAvoy.
This is the new breed of defenseman. It's not the crushers like like yesteryear.
The Darian Hatchers and the Prongers. Yeah.
Scott Stevens.
Yeah, Scott Stevens.
Yeah.
Kind of started with Drew Doughty, I think.
Yeah, they're not looking for guys now that are, I mean, sure, they'll take him if you get a 6'4 defenseman. 6'4, 220, mobile, but mobile is the key word now. You got to be able to skate, be mobile, skilled, move the puck.
Yeah. All right, so let's, now we're going to turn this on you. You're usually the one asking the questions, but now we get to ask you. And so, yeah, day one, what do you remember about the Alpines? I mean, obviously things you can tell us would be great. I don't know what you can and cannot tell us, but just year one with the Alpines. I mean, I love the jersey. I love the – it was different, but obviously I like these ones too. But
yeah.
Just year one, what kind of can you share?
Well,
or remember?
I can remember so many things clearly about that first season. I remember things clearly about every season. I kind of measure everything in my life by the season that this happened. I remember what year I got married by what season it was. What year I got divorced by what season it was. That's pretty sad, but true.
Yeah. when you're following that many times. Yeah.
Excuse me. That first season, I remember Moncton at a home game. It was their home opener. They'd lost in Halifax 4-2 the Friday night. Their season opener, came back home Sunday afternoon at the Moncton Coliseum, and Moncton beat Rimouski Oceanic 6-5 in overtime in their first ever game at the Coliseum, and they had a forward, his name just escaped me, he had one eye.
Beauregard.
David Alexander Beauregard.
Right. Yeah.
Senior moment here.
I can't even believe
he had one eye.
That.
He had
that
one
was,
eye.
That was impressive.
He scored the overtime winner.
Yeah.
Moncton had 2,448 fans at that game, and that was their second biggest crowd of the season.
Jeez.
Wow. After that, they averaged about 800 fans the rest of the way. And
so there was really no appetite for junior hockey, or
I think what happened is the AHL had just left the season before, or two seasons before. It was a 10-12 man ownership group. 10 or 12 person ownership group, and it was pretty much all absentee owners. There was two or three local people.
Mm.
The rest were other parts of Canada into the U.S., and I think they just vastly misread the market, and they thought that Moncton was just so hungry for hockey that they just had to say, there's a game Friday night, 7 o'clock, be there. And they didn't market the thing properly. Ticket prices were out of whack, but mainly it was a lack of marketing. And the team didn't have an identity in the community. And they started out the season on fire. I mean, going to, not on the ice, but spending money. They were flying places with charter flights. And they went to the draft that June, and they flew to the draft. Jeez. Other teams at the draft that year, at their hospitality suite, other teams had sandwiches and trays of chips and pop and normal snack food. And
yeah.
Moncton Alpines had a chef there with the white hat, and he was flipping lobster and shrimp in the air with the fire going up in the air.
Styling and profiling.
They were the new kids on the block, and people were like, whoa, these guys are big wheels for Moncton. And they've got the money, and they're class act. But by Christmas, they'd spent their money. They'd lost $300,000. The league had a cash call to save them financially. By second half of the season, they often slept on the bus because they didn't have any money for... There was a road game in Quebec one time where they had to borrow sticks from the home team in order to play the game. Another time where the home team in Quebec had to pay for their post-game meal. They just barely scraped by and barely got out of that season. They were 14-48-8 on the ice. Which you expect from expansion.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But,
yeah,
they went through a lot of hardship that season. And then Robert Irving came in at the last... At the kind of the 11th hour, really, when the season ended, came in late May and purchased the team. And a week later, they were off to the draft.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So were they going to, like, just be done? Or were they going to be moved to another city?
There's all kinds of rumblings about them being moved. And Baie-Comeau was one of the rumors at the time because they didn't have a team in the league at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think they were either going to fold or move to another market. And Baie-Comeau seemed to be the rumored destination in the day. And then, like I said, Robert Irving came in at the last minute, and he purchased the franchise. They had a press conference in late May at City Hall. And they had this huge... I won't tell you what it is just for the purpose of the story, but there was this huge container on stage, and it was covered over by drapes. And nobody knew what it was. it was just like bed sheets and huge drapes covering this container, and nobody could figure out what it was, and it was on stage at City Hall. And then they finally said, and the name of the team is the Moncton Wildcats, and they lifted the drapes from the cage, and it was a tiger from the Magnetic Hill Zoo,
right,
in the cage. And on cue, when they lifted the drapes, the tiger roared. It was almost like it was trained. When they said the name of the team is the Moncton Wildcats, you heard this roar, and this tiger went crazy in the cage. I'll always remember that.
That's awesome.
And then a week later, they were off to the draft, and Bill Riley was the first head coach and director of hockey operations, and yeah.
Who was the first pick?
That was Pierre Dagenais.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Pierre Dagenais was the first pick of the Moncton Alpines.
Right.
Roberto Luongo was second, which maybe if you had to do it over again. But every expansion team always needs goal scoring, and mm-hmm. Pierre Dagenais was the goal scorer.
At 14 and 48, they might need a puck stopper, too.
Yeah. they needed everything.
Yeah, exactly.
But the first Wildcats pick ever was Jean-François Danfous,
right,
goaltender.
Yeah.
And Moncton owned the second pick in that draft, and they made a flip of picks with Victoriaville. Moncton moved from second down to fourth, excuse me, took the goaltender, Jean-François Danfous, mm-hmm, fourth overall, and they received something else in the deal, obviously, and then, yeah, then the next season they were even worse. They were 16-52-2 in their second season. So the first two seasons they had 30 wins combined, and then the third season they had 27-28 wins by themselves and made the playoffs in season three, and then they beat Chicoutimi in the first round of the playoffs that year. So that was quite exciting.
I don't even remember half of these stories. I mean, I remember the press conference at City Hall. I think I was there. I don't remember the tiger.
Yeah.
I remember they introduced Wild Willie as the mascot.
Yeah.
But that's it. I don't remember a tiger, so it's amazing
I didn't know about the tiger until last August when I took my kid to the zoo. Yeah. Coming around and there's an actual thing in front of the tiger.
Yeah.
That's when I found out about the tiger being, I'm like, huh.
Yeah, it was Tomar the tiger. He was the mascot of the zoo, and he was the big wheel at the zoo there, and the kids loved him, and the Wildcats actually went and videotaped Tomar and in the cage at the Magnetic Hill Zoo, and then every time they would score a goal, they would have to show Tomar roaring on the video screen.
Dude, that's coming back to me now.
I remember. You know what's sad? I can remember how many goals and assists some Wildcat player had 15 seasons ago, and what the team's record was in the 2002-03 season and all this foolishness. But I'll forget to put the garbage out on Tuesday.
You only got so much knowledge up there that...
I have my priorities in order.
Exactly. So, I mean, first season to now, you must have seen so many different rinks. Like, what are some of your favorite your favorite rinks that you've been to? Like,
well, I mean, a lot of people might be surprised at some of the answers I give here, but as far as like atmosphere,
right,
they're not the nicest buildings.
No, they don't have to be. That's
because, I mean, you'd say the buildings in Halifax, Quebec City, they'd be the natural ones you'd mention because they're nice buildings along with Moncton, of course.
But even over time,
I would say buildings that I like just for pure atmosphere, Rimouski, Val-d'Or, and Rouyn-Noranda. They're neat rinks. You're really on top of the action. The press box is literally hanging over the ice. Like in those small rinks, they seat about 3,200-3,300 each. Just tight quarters. And in the press box there, if you literally drop your notebook out of the press box, it'll fall on the ice. Like it's literally below you. So you're very close to the action. You can see the facial expression on the players. You can feel the heavy hits on the boards. Yeah, so I like those rinks, Val-d'Or, Rouyn-Noranda. Victoriaville's a good place. The fans are lively, really into it. Drummondville, the rink's a hole, but it has a great... but it's got a great atmosphere. It's dirty, it's grungy, it's a hole. I wouldn't eat anything at the canteen there. I mean, the place has no redeeming qualities, that rink in Drummondville, except for the fans are loud and they're into it.
Yeah.
That's the only good thing I can say about that place.
Now, people have told me, I don't know if you can confirm this or not, I'm a big poutine guy, but people tell me the best poutine is right across the street from the arena in Rouyn-Noranda. Can you confirm?
They have a sign out there. I haven't tried it, but they have a sign out front that says, home of the world's greatest poutine. So that's self-proclaimed, but
that's worth the drive if you ask me.
I know the players and coaches. It's 24 hours too, so I know a lot of Wildcat players and coaches have been known to run down there at late night stops there.
Let's talk of my name right there, 24
hours. Not even kidding. He had one at the draft at like 1:30 in the morning. I was editing one of the shows, and he comes in with two poutines for him and his wife.
It's true. Yeah, that's pretty good.
The worst rink in the league, though, I got to say, Charlottetown. I don't like that rink.
Yeah,
at all.
You know what?
Yeah, it's not
dead over there. It's
you can't walk around entire mezzanine.
Everything. Poor sight lines from a fan's point of view.
Yeah.
The press box is a joke. Everything.
I mean, it was. It, I don't think it was built for hockey, though, was it?
It was built for the Canada Games in '89. Right. But I mean, they used to have a press box, and then they decided to turn that into some luxury boxes, and they could sell it for a few dollars, and they made the. There's bathrooms that are bigger than the press box in Charlottetown.
Yeah,
I can agree. They do have pretty big bathrooms there. hopefully they can get their new rink within the next 5 years. It's lots of talks about it. So
yeah, they've been talking for a long time over there about that. I'll kind of believe it when I see it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of there's quite a few good rinks in the league. I shouldn't say good rinks, good atmospheres in the rink.
Right,
Baie-Comeau rink's a dump. Great atmosphere. Yeah. Fans are really into it there. And it's funny because just to give the listeners an idea, the press box, well, first of all, the rink seats about 3,400. That's packed. Fans are really loud. And they're doing the rowing of the boat or motion because the Drakkar is a Viking boat.
Yeah.
And they're doing the rowing of the boat during the game when the team's doing well. So they're really into it. They're loud. They're boisterous. And the back row of the stands is right up against the press box. So if fans are standing up in the back row, then in the press box, you have to stand up to look over their head and see the ice. And there was a guy who was the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles broadcaster years ago. Prior to him. prior to him, so Cape Breton scored a goal. Of course, he does what any home broadcaster is supposed to do, and he gets excited. He scores, and his voice went up in the air, and this woman sitting in the back row next to the press box, literally 2 feet from him, she got mad and turned around and hit him with a purse. So they're passionate there.
That's good.
I love that's Pat if he knows about that story.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember being in Chicoutimi one night. If you're talking about memories, I mean, this is a bad memory, but I mean, there's crazy things happen. Like in Chicoutimi, I mean, I remember a Wildcat player up against the glass along the boards for taking her face off, and the fan leaned over the board and poured a beer on him.
Cool.
And stuff like that. I remember the night Ted Nolan was coaching the Wildcats, the 05-06 season. It was December, last game before Christmas.
Yeah.
And there was a racial incident. There was a lot of fans that went in. Ted Nolan's from a native reserve in Ontario.
Yeah.
Fans went into the rink that night wearing head feathers. They were pretending they had bow and arrows. They were pretending they were shooting it at them. It was ugly. That was the most disgraceful incident that I've seen in my 31 years as a sports writer. That was a sad night for the Q, and real sad night for the Q.
If social media would have been around at that time, it wouldn't have been pretty if that story went viral.
Yeah, and then it was pretty well documented on the Ted Nolan story that was aired on CBC and ABTN. I left that rink that night feeling really sad for the state of hockey and really the state of humanity that anybody could be that cruel. And if I wasn't there and I didn't see it for myself,
you wouldn't believe it.
Well, I would have thought somebody was exaggerating how bad it was.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, people pretending that they were shooting bow and arrows and playing war music over the PA system and, just stuff that's utterly ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have believed it if somebody had told me. Yeah, so that's my single worst memory of covering the Q.
That would be one
night. That's my saddest, worst memory.
I remember that night, and I know I still personally can't even remember a time where the league has been so. I can't really put it on the league, right? But it's just a moment where you really can't forget about it.
Yeah.
And I know as soon as you mentioned Ted Nolan and Chicoutimi, I knew you were going to mention that story. And times have changed. And I know if that would happen, next season, right? There would be just the backlash would be, it would be so much more backlash with a story like that, just because there's so many more ways to for the story to get out there.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. We had to get a police escort to the bus after the game that night. I mean, it was nuts. Truly, it was crazy. But fortunately, that's one bad memory. There's lots of great ones over the years too.
So let's get into that. I guess aside from the two President's Cup championships, what's been your most memorable experience, I guess, as a reporter for the Wildcats or the league in general?
Well, I think I'll always remember the 2003-04 season because that was Moncton's first trip to the league final. Corey Crawford was the goaltender, and he was unbelievable in that playoff run. And Moncton went to the league final, ended up losing 4-1 series to Gatineau, who went on to lose the Memorial Cup 2-1 to Kelowna Rockets. So, but that was a really exciting time. Moncton's first trip to the league final. There was an incredible buzz around the hockey team in Moncton at that time. And, I mean, there always has been, but it was really special. Whenever you make your first run to the league final, that stands out in my mind. You know, a lot of the things that Connor Garland did during his four seasons here, winning two scoring titles, and it's gonna be could be a long time before we see another player as special as him. I remember one game in Baie-Comeau. There was so many Connor Garland stories that I could fill airtime with, but I'll just tell this one. One night in Baie-Comeau, there was about 2-3 minutes left in the third period, tie game. He got a minor penalty, said something to the referee, and got a 10-minute misconduct. So he should have been out the rest of the game. 2 minutes remaining in the third plus the 5-minute overtime. So game goes into overtime. So he misses the rest of regulation time, not 2 minutes. The 5-minute overtime should have been gone. He came back out for the shootout. And somehow the referees missed it.
How do you miss that?
The referees missed it. And Darren Rumble knew that he wasn't supposed to have Connor Garland on the lineup, but he played dumb. Put his name down. He was just going to play the dumb card. Oh, I didn't know he wasn't allowed to be in the shootout.
Yeah.
Referees didn't catch it. Mm-hmm. The Baie-Comeau coach was screaming at the referee before the shootout began. Anyways, wasn't getting through to the referee. Turns out, doesn't Connor Garland score the winner in the shootout?
Of course he does.
The fans are going crazy in Baie-Comeau. They're throwing stuff on the ice. And Connor Garland is skating around the ice with one finger on his mouth, giving the fans the shh sign, be quiet.
Such a Connor Garland move.
I thought we were going to have to please ask for him and knowing that. I mean, that guy, you love to have him on your team.
Yeah.
He was an entertainer, but people hated him around the league.
You're right. Like, Moncton fans loved him, but it doesn't matter which rink he went into. Oh, yeah. It was, you know, he heard the boos.
He was a polarizing figure, right?
Yeah.
And,
It's you see it right now, like Ivanov, you go into Halifax, fans don't like him at all.
No.
And you know, he has those antics, I guess,
the love to hate.
Right?
Yeah.
You can strike a nerve and especially, you know, it works in Halifax. And
they've
had his number on a few occasions this year, but that, you know, that game this past season when, you know, he scored in overtime, and he does the eagle celebration. That's what started it, really.
Yeah.
And that's
because every time they score, they look at him and do the eagle celebration back. And I mean, Noah Dobson had the same thing for the league final in the Memorial Cup, right?
Yeah, you know you're good when the other team's fans boo you mercilessly.
Right? Yeah,
that's actually quite a compliment.
Yeah, and that's basically how he took it.
Yeah.
The new building. We've given our thoughts. We've now all been in the Videotron Center.
Yeah.
Jeremy was there last week. But other than that building, this is probably the best junior hockey building.
Yeah, I would say this, and I've spoke to other people who share the same opinion, including media in Quebec City. I would say, no doubt, Videotron is the nicest building in the league. I mean, it should be. It's a $400 million building.
It's an NHL building.
It's an NHL building. It's $400 million. It's almost 20,000 seats. But it's an NHL building. So they have the best, Quebec City has the best building in the league. Moncton has the best junior hockey building in the league.
Right.
The atmosphere for a junior hockey game in Moncton is superior to that of a junior hockey game in Quebec City.
Mm.
I mean, even if you have 7,000 or 8,000 fans at a game in Quebec City, it kind of gets lost. It's a cavernous building. You need about 12,000, 13,000 in that building to have a a vibrant atmosphere. You can have 4,000 in Moncton, and there's a better atmosphere than 7,000 or 8,000 in Quebec City.
Yeah, because, I mean, 7,000 people in a 20,000-seat arena, it's...
Yeah, third. Right.
The sound's just going to go up to nothing.
Yeah, and high ceilings. It is cavernous. Mm-hmm. You need 14, 15,000 there, 12 minimum, to really have that place rocking.
And but, like Pat showed us where the press box is up there too. Like you're a mile up.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I can even see the players. It's like
I think this building among the Avenir Center is far nicer than anything I ever anticipated. It's the press facilities, the comfort for fans, I mean the number of concessions, it has everything. Mm-hmm. It truly is a world class building. And I hope the people of Moncton really realize how fortunate they are to have a building of that stature. I mean it has everything from a 360-degree concourse that circles all around the building. There aren't a lot of buildings that have that.
Nope.
You know, and people complained about parking before it opened, but you know what? 2 months into the season, I haven't heard anybody talk about parking for a long time.
Nope.
There's a lot more parking downtown than people realize.
It's true. I mean, I'll be honest. I cheated the system a few times. I parked at Sobeys. Yeah. Went run inside, grab a bottle of pop, come outside, walk to the ring.
Yeah.
You're a paying customer.
Yeah. I just moved closer.
Yeah. Well, you walked
this,
there.
Living here was not by design for this upcoming season. But, I mean, we parked at the Capitol building most winter nights at $3. Mm-hmm. And it's almost no different than parking at the far side of the Coliseum.
Yeah.
But what's funny about the Videotron Center, and I said this to wife, could you imagine if Moncton, with all the hoopla of this new building, we didn't need it, there's nowhere to park. Do you imagine if they'd have built this building on the same property as the Coliseum?
Yeah.
Like the Videotron Center and the Pepsi Coliseum. Like, people would have lost their minds if they'd have built that same building. Yeah. And
exactly. You know what's really interesting? I went in the archives, newspaper archives one day, and if you go back to the year, a couple of years prior to the Moncton Coliseum being built, all the arguments people made about the Avenir Center, don't need it, cost too much money, taxpayers' money, parking. There was all those same things were being said about the Moncton Coliseum back in that day. The Moncton Coliseum served Moncton quite well for 45 years, and it turned out parking was a non-issue there, obviously. But back in the day, originally there was some fear that it would be an issue. But all those people, the naysayers that said we didn't need the Moncton Coliseum, served the city great for 45 years, and this rink is doing the same now, and even better, of course.
That would have been a fun article for you to print. Bring back a nice retro throwback Thursday article.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have a question? Come on.
I don't know.
You've known him longer than I have.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, followed him.
Yeah, I guess. I don't want to talk about hockey for a second, but you do a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
What's been your favorite, your favorite place you've ever been to?
What, you mean hockey-wise or just anywhere?
Just anywhere in the world. Like, your off-season, your...
Well,
we can get off the hockey talk for a little
the,
bit.
The month break that you get.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, besides Val d'Or... Right.
If there's enough spots on the bench for the team.
Yeah. You know what? I like Portugal a lot. I just got back from there. I was over there after this season ended. I went for a couple of weeks, and that was a lot of fun. Panama's another great place. Clean, safe, beautiful country. Very modern, with goods and services being dropped off every day at the Panama Canal. I've been to a lot of places in the Caribbean, but I like some of the countries down Central America, El Salvador, some of the places that fly under the radar, volcanic countries. Neat beaches, black sand, huge volcanic rocks on the beach.
Black sand.
Yeah, beaches have character.
It's
different. I mean, don't get me wrong. Who doesn't like going to the Caribbean and seeing the white sugar, white sand beaches and all that.
Sure,
if you want to see something different, I always advise people to go to Central America. And you know what? It's actually cheaper.
Is that right?
Yeah, a lot of great package deals.
I wouldn't even know how to get to El Salvador.
Get to Toronto, you get to Reagan.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Okay, Adam, your turn.
No, I was just looking at, I brought up our stats quick. I think I figured out where our Portugal list might have been from.
In Portugal?
Yeah. If you listen to the show while you're in Portugal.
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
we had a listener from Portugal. We were trying to figure out where it was.
I was just trying to figure out where where it was and
right next to Spain.
Yeah. No, we have a bunch of like countries that have downloaded one of our episodes. It's like Portugal, Italy. And we're like, who's listening to us from Portugal or Italy?
Like, so as soon as you said Portugal right after the season ended, I was like...
A lot of Canadians go to Portugal, too, for it's a retirement destination.
Yeah.
Okay.
So...
Yeah, Sweden, like Sweden, Switzerland, Brazil, like some of the hockey countries we get, but like Brazil, I mean, obviously Japan was from Spence's family.
Yeah.
But Lithuania, Portugal, Poland, Italy, France, Belgium, I'm like, okay.
That's quite an international presence
you guys have. It is true. And you look at the stats from the U.S., the state with the most downloads is from California.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, all time.
And you wouldn't think. You'd think maybe like Seitz's family in New York or, one of the Americans in Massachusetts. Like in California?
You know what? I have to tell your listeners this. This is my first time in the Wildcast podcast studio. I'm pretty impressed. Wildcast paraphernalia all around.
This is all Adam.
And Go Cats Go pennants and jerseys. And
stolen signs from the Coliseum.
There you go. this is pretty
neat. Signs from the garage sale.
This is definitely Cats Country in here, red and white all the way, and photos of former Wildcat players on the walls. Yeah, this is
it's
definite Wildcats. This is all Wildcats all the way in this room. This I'm quite impressed.
Thank you.
We're going to need to upgrade in here soon. Just going to run out of room.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the players are going to go into the Hall of Fame spots.
That's right. Behind the wall.
Yeah, behind the curtain. I had this last year. I talked about a Hall of Fame. I think they should put a Hall of Fame in the Avenir Center, even if it's names on a wall, whatever. If you could pick, we'll say, three players, who would you put in the Wildcats Hall of Fame?
In the Wildcats Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to start with Connor Garland. He's the only guy to win a scoring title, and he's won two of them.
Yeah.
So I think that's a no-brainer. After that, I think you got to put Nicola Riopelle in there. You know, he for a long time held the league record for goals against average.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Held the Wildcats record for most wins in the season. In terms of stats, you know, he and Corey Crawford were right there. You could make an argument for either of those two guys being the best goaltender in Wildcats history, but I think you probably got to put Riopelle in there for having the best goals against average in a single season in league history. And the third guy, probably, I'm trying to think of a guy who's been, you know what, I'm going to go with Sebastian Roger.
Yeah.
You know what, he played four seasons for the Wildcats. He was the team's all-time career scoring leader for a long time until Connor Garland came along.
Yep.
What was incredible about him was that he played on terrible teams for two of his four seasons here. I mean, truly terrible teams. Still racked up big numbers. Never missed a game. He was an Ironman. Four seasons, never missed a game. Very little support around him. It would have been easy for opposition to zero in and focus all their checking attention on him, which they tried to do.
Right.
And really, there was no secondary team scoring on two of those four teams that he played for here. And yet he still managed. He was a slippery, elusive guy. If there was a pile of players in front of the net, he's the one guy, pure natural sniper. He could find a way to get the puck through a crowd into the net. He may be the best pure goal scorer in Wildcats history. Now, there's been some other unbelievable Wildcat players over the years, but...
If you're going to start with the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, with those three, because I'm thinking guys like Matthew Benoit, guys like that, they came in here for a half season, right?
Yeah.
They were traded for a half season of their final junior season when Moncton was building for a championship run. So I would kind of exclude those guys from that conversation if you're starting a Wildcats Hall of Fame. I would like to go with guys that spend at least three seasons here.
Right.
Question here. I just did some math. Uh-oh. So Connor Garland's got 328 career points.
Yeah.
Pelche is at 150.
Yeah.
So we can assume that Pelche will turn pro at 20.
Yeah.
So without any... let's say he stays as a Wildcat for the next 2 years. He needs to average 89 points for the next two seasons to tie.
Yeah.
Think he gets it?
If he stays healthy, no question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's not a doubt in my mind. If he stays healthy... He'll get it. The only thing there is next season he's going to rack up a lot of points. He'll be over 100 points this season.
Oh, for sure.
This season coming up. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, two seasons from now, if Moncton's rebuilding, do they trade him?
That's the that only concern, too. I mean, next year is going to be... personally, I think next year is going to be...
They're going to be dynamite.
An all-in...
You mean like this season?
Oh, yeah, this upcoming season.
Yeah, this is going to be the all-in?
Yeah, 2019, 2020 will be absolute all-in. I mean, the trade for Rodrigue is just...
Yeah, you don't make a trade for a star goaltender like Olivier Rodrigue.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a third overall pick in the Quebec League, second NHL draft pick, signed with Edmonton.
Yes.
He's 19. he's 19 years old. Yeah. He's probably likely here just for one season because he's 20. If he's already signed an NHL contract, he'll be playing pro at 20. So I don't see why they would have traded for him if they weren't planning to make other moves. Now, I think they've got championship goaltending right now, and they've got a championship level group of forwards. I don't see any other team in the league right now that Moncton has as good or better group of forwards than anybody else in the league as we speak at this time. I mean, Moncton was number 5 offensively in the league this past season. They're going to have their top 4 scorers back from last season. They're going to have 8 or 9 forwards back, including all their top guns from last season.
They just added Zachary LaRue.
Position. Exactly. They just added Zachary LaRue, power forward. Could challenge for the, you know, a top 2 line position, could be that 6th forward. Right now they have 5 legitimate top 2 line forwards. Who's going to be that 6th forward that fills out the top 2 lines? Is it going to be Zachary LaRue? I couldn't figure out how to say his name. And then
his family told us just don't call him LaRux.
Is
it going to be him, or is it going to be Jacob Hudson? Is it going to be whoever they select in the upcoming European draft? Although, personally, I think that they need to take a defenseman because right now they go to dynamite group of forwards. They have dynamite goaltending. But defense has some concerns for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I look at the defense right now, okay, Jordan Spence and Jonathan Aspro. Two legitimate.
Yeah.
They're top four defensemen, legit. Mm. After that, you know, the only other returning defensemen are Tristan DeJong and Sean Stewart, who really are probably number 6, number 7 defenseman on a championship level team. Third pair guys.
Yeah.
So they need number 3, 4, 5 defensemen. They need three defensemen. So I think they're going to have to get one of them, one of those 3 defensemen they need from the Euro draft. Maybe one from a trade and one from a free agent. Because I don't know if they got the resources to trade for 2 of them. Well, they do if they want to empty the cupboard totally. But
which is always scary.
Yeah. I don't know that they...
I mean,
people talk about them going all in. I don't know that they ever want to go all in and put their eggs all in one basket to go for one season now because, well, first of all, they remember what happened a few seasons ago at the Coliseum when they had 25-game losing streak. I don't think they ever want to go sink that far again.
I don't think it's possible to sink that far again.
This will be a very difficult show if they sink that far again.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think they'll ever want to go down that road and go for it that much. Mm-hmm. I think they want to be in a position of sustainability to have a competitive team every season, and then when they think that they're in a position where they can really challenge, be in the top 3, 4 in the league, then you make that 1 or 2 impact trades to put you over the top.
So, do you think that sustainability, always never really emptying the cupboards, you think that's because Halifax never really does that, and they're always wanting to beat Halifax? Like, St. John's done it, Bathurst has done it. Do you think because Halifax never really does it and they're always in there, Moncton needs to compete with that, and that's why they don't?
I think Moncton's learned some lessons from St. John and Halifax, and although St. John's gone through some real rough times, Halifax is probably the better example, like you said. But I think Moncton's watched what Halifax has done in the last few years. Halifax used to go for it all in one season, and then they went through about 3 terrible seasons in a row at one point, rebuilding, and they missed the playoffs a couple of years in a row, and you just can't afford to miss the playoffs in big markets like Halifax and Moncton. I just think that with the new building in Moncton too, you got 8,800 seats, downtown facility, world-class stadium. From a business perspective too, I don't think Moncton wants to sink that far, and in that facility, they know they have to have a competitive team on the ice.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. Just from purely a business point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they ever want to sink that far down in the bottom 2-3 of the league again.
You're right. It kind of like, I say the term all in because that's what you hear.
Yes.
Right? but you can say buyers, right?
Buyers, right? No question, that's, buyers, guaranteed.
So let's put GM Neil Hodge in the spotlight here now. So you're talking about they're missing two defensemen at least.
Yeah.
They've for the first time in a long time, they've got assets.
Yeah.
They've got picks. You look at a team like Rouyn-Noranda is going to be rebuilding this year.
Yeah.
You call up Mario Pouliot and you say, we want Alexis Arsenault and Justin Bergeron.
Yeah.
There's your, they could be the 1-2 defenseman. Yeah. Then you put Aspro and Spence as a 3-4 defenseman. I mean, you still got Stewart and DeJong who are fully capable of being a 5-6.
Yeah.
I think Stewart can play forward. I think he's going to play more forward than defense this year.
I think he'll be on defense just because they're thin back there. I do like him as a forward, though.
Yeah.
Your point's well taken. I like him as a fourth line grinder, forward, energy guy. But I just think because of the situation they're in where they're thin on the blue line and they're stacked pretty well up front, that I think out of necessity he'll be forced back to defense. But I do like him as a forward, though, like you're saying.
Sorry to cut you off, Jeremy.
No, it's okay. Like, personally, right now, if you look at... I like Sean Stewart as a forward as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at who you could possibly have as your fourth line next year, like, you could have Kyle Foreman, Jacob Stewart...
Al Shorn.
That would be a fantastic fourth line.
Yeah.
And then, really, you're just focusing on your D at that point.
Yeah.
Like, if... Call me crazy, but like I would pencil those three as my fourth line right now, no question. But yeah, like it's like that to me. You look at Alexis Arsenault, Justin Bergeron. You could get them. Yeah, it's going to cost a lot.
Yeah.
Your first round pick in 2020 is gone because of the Rodrigue deal.
Yeah.
But you have 2 second round picks in 2020. You get 2 third round picks in 2020. Like it's just. They have assets right now. If they do decide to buy and make these moves, you know, the following year is not going to be fun. But you have players, you know, like Belche that you could dangle.
Yeah.
You don't want to see him go, right? But just, I mean, a return for him plus a return for Spence, I mean, you're right there again.
Yeah.
Right? You're probably getting... For each, at least, Pelche is worth 2 first-round picks and a prospect.
And if Spence keeps going, he'll be close to the same.
Right? That's what I mean. Like you finally have as a fan, you finally have that feel that you can, if you decide to buy, and you're in a bad season the next year, you can turn it around pretty quickly.
Yeah. And you have LaRue, you have Hébert, who was a steal for us to build around. It's not like they're emptying the cupboards. And then going to the draft to try and fill that role. You're already going to have LaRue with a season under his belt, Hébert with a season under his belt. I mean, the guy that I've talked about many times, McCormick. He's probably a little bit of a cheaper option to fill that third defensive role from Cape Breton. Yeah. But then you just need, like you said, one import defenseman, McCormick, and then you're filling your forward role with Stewart, Alshon, Hébert.
Like, I think they're not saying it. I just talked to John Torchetti a couple days ago, and he's not going to tip his hand. I get it.
For sure.
But
get him in here. I see. We'll make him tip his hand in here.
Here you go.
Everyone tips their hand in here.
Yeah. Just so you know, John, you're not recording right now.
Yeah, we did that to Richie. He told us everything, but told us nothing.
But I don't see how they don't take a European or a defenseman in the upcoming European draft. I mean, I think their hand is forced. I think they're out of necessity. They have to take a defenseman.
Which is kind of the unfortunate. I mean, like, I'm big on these draft things. I follow this stuff. You know, it's the European draft is always the toughest one because it's like a crapshoot.
Yeah.
If you want to put it that way, but everything I read, it's a bad year for European defensemen.
Yeah.
So that's the only concern to me. Yeah. I mean,
the only thing they could just to circle back and defeat my own argument. You could. Play devil's advocate with myself here. I mean, they could draft a European forward, and then all of a sudden they're really stacked up front, and then you trade from a position of strength. I know you can't trade the Euro forward because of league rules.
Right. Yeah.
But if they add a Euro forward, then all of a sudden that could make a current forward on the team expendable in trade for a defenseman who's already in the league. So you can always go that route too.
See, I'm actually, I wouldn't be against them taking a forward because if I look at it this way, I think. the only spot that's really open right now in forward is I guess you can shift the second line around, but like you can safely say that they'll probably keep Dinoyer, Sear, and McKenna together as long as they don't sign pro deals.
Yeah,
and then you have Palche, Ivanov, and then that right side of that second line is kind of open to me. I like Hudson there, but I just don't think he has like the offensive upside to really play with them. So I think that should be their focus of with their first pick of the import draft. I mean, you take someone who's, you don't want to take an NHL drafted player would be great, but then you have that worry where, I mean, they could easily sign a deal and they're coming over from Europe, they could bolt right to the NHL and not even show up. So I don't know, just take somebody with a late birthday who's not eligible till 2020.
Well, they're likely going to select two players in the Euro draft.
I was just going to say,
select
a forward and a defenseman and make them battle out in camp.
They could have three Euros in camp. Mm-hmm. The reason they're allowed to, of course, is in case Hovanov turns pro.
Right,
And he can only turn pro in the NHL. He's not allowed to go to the AHL.
Yeah.
So I mean...
take two and see.
They'll take two.
Battles it out.
As long as Hovanov's here, then it'll be Hovanov plus one of the two that they take. Right.
I wouldn't be against them taking it forward with their first pick and then swing for the fences with their second pick with, I mean, a big name that's over in Europe that, you know, that goes in the first two rounds of the NHL draft and see if they can get him over here. And then, but then what do you do? Like, it's the only player really you can trade is Ivanov because you can't trade your first import pick.
Yeah.
So if
they pick a forward, odds are he's going to be in that top six.
Oh, because you don't take an import forward if he's not going to play top six.
Because you said Huddy doesn't have the offense to play in that second line, but I think he's the guy that goes in the corners and gets the puck for the offensive guys. But we've talked about it. Huddy and LaRue should play together most of the year.
Those two are going to complement each other so well. And then you just got to find somebody that plays with them on the left
side.
They'd
be miserable to play against.
Oh, yeah. That's what makes him so perfect.
In your face.
That's where I had Stewart playing.
Nasty.
On the other left side.
It's too bad. It's too bad they need him on defense. Jeez.
Yeah, I know.
Too bad. That would be a mean line to play against. They'd really wear you down. You know what? If I look at the Ghost roster, the Wildcats right now up front, they could have nine returning forwards, including their top four scorers from last season. And then outside those top four, you've got guys like Hudson, Desnoyers. You know, that's five top scorers right there. I don't know that there'll really be nine returning forwards, though. You know what? Not to pick on any individual, but you know what? They do need to create some room for new blood at forward. And to me, if I was going to guess, there's nine potential returning forwards. If there's one returning forward that I think is in danger of losing his job on the team, and I may eat my words, but I would say Ozzie King. He's the guy, I think, that could lose his job. There's a potential of 14 returnees on this team. I don't really think there will be 14 when all said and done. I think it could be more like 12.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be 12, 13 returnees, which would mean about 11 or 12 newcomers. Newcomers would be Eurodraft. I think they've got something up their sleeve in terms of, I think they'll land a couple of, I'd be quite surprised if they didn't land at least two impact free agents. And when I say impact, I'm talking nothing against Dylan Sykes, but better than him.
Yeah.
I like Dylan Sykes.
Yeah.
I thought he was a great free agent pickup. But I think they'll land two free agents who are better than Dylan Sykes.
Mm.
Probably one of them will be a defenseman. And I don't have any inside track. I'd like to say I did, but I
lies.
Didn't. Yeah. I think that John Torchetti has a lot of contacts in NHL circles, and there could be some guys. He even told me himself they may have a lead on one or two guys. American kids who, depending on what round of the NHL draft they go in this weekend, if they go in a certain round, those kids may think it's better for their development to change their mind and come to the major junior versus the U.S. college hockey route to expedite their development. So that's kind of what the Wildcats are hoping for right now, is that they're going to be able to pick up a free agent through the, just like St. John did with Charlie Coyle. Although they got him mid-season.
Uh-huh.
But somebody of that nature, somebody of that caliber.
Somebody who just doesn't drop out of college to come play. Somebody who just wants to better their development. And that's nothing against NCAA, but,
yeah.
I mean,
Well, Major Junior is more of a pro game.
Exactly.
Number of practices, right. Number of games. Yeah. I mean, they play 2.5 times more mm-hmm. games than U.S. college teams do. And most of the, I mean, everybody knows if you're a really top flight NHL prospect, you don't end up playing 4 years of U.S. college hockey anyway. 99% of the time, you play 2 years U.S. college.
You sign your deal.
Sign your deal, go to the NHL, and you never end up getting the degree for whatever it is you were studying.
That's, I mean, if you're looking at, I mean, these aren't going to be guys that are on Moncton's protected list. These are actually going to be, like, free agents.
Yeah.
You know, these are guys who probably have NCAA commitments that are, you know, just completely forego that and come to Moncton. And that's, they've said that. They said, we've got the facilities to recruit these players. We can all agree with that. We've got the coaching staff to do it. It wouldn't surprise me if it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a free acquisition.
Yeah.
It's going to save you from going out and swinging for the fences at the trade deadline.
Exactly. I've certainly heard reports of, I don't know names, but I know that they've been bringing guys in and showing them the facilities during this offseason. They haven't been quiet. They've been quite busy behind the scenes bringing prospects through, free agents from different parts of Canada, the U.S., through, showing them the city, showing them the Avenir Center, the dressing room. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff to brag about and show off and trying to woe some of these top prospects.
Why wouldn't you use it?
Yeah, use it as a facilities. Didn't work for Jeremy Jock, that's for sure. But
exactly.
They brought him into the Avenir Center when it was still under construction. Everybody was when they brought him to Parley Beach too when it was the poop beach and not a great.
So timing wasn't great.
Now we know why he didn't show up.
So 2 months, or I guess a month and a bit out of camp. You kind of see this year's camp is the same as last year.
Yeah,
anything's really open. Not anything, but. A lot of competition. It's not set in stone and two guys will make it.
No, I think there's wide open. I think there'll be 10, 11, 12 newcomers on the team this season. One newcomer I'm interested to see that I expect to make the team this season for sure on defense is Sam Dow. So,
now if I got high hopes for him. Yeah.
Now, if Sam Dow makes the team and he'll be a third pair guy on defense. Now, if he makes the team as a third line guy, does that allow them to push Sean Stewart back to four and put him on that fourth line
That's why I put him up there because I had Hebear and Dow.
Yeah.
Both of them as your six, seven with somebody with DeJong on the fifth pair.
Because I'm looking at, if I look at this year's draft, I mean, Zachary Leroux, he may be the only guy from the draft who makes the team immediately, except for, here's a wild card. I'll just throw this out there. Dominic LeBlanc, forward, eighth round draft pick, played for the Moncton Flyers. John Torchetti likes him a lot.
Yeah,
Some of the quotes that he gave me were, he will be a great third line player, hard worker, hard nosed, feisty, high energy, plays the game the right way. And he said, he repeated that to me again, plays the game the right way, will be a great third line player.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, are you talking about this upcoming season or 2 seasons from now? He said, I don't know. I don't want to put limits on anybody. If he comes to training camp and proves himself, that's what training camp's for. He said, so it's not for me to put limits on anybody before camp opens and say, we've got him pigeonholed for next season and this guy pigeonholed for the 19-20 season or the 2021 season. He said, don't do that. Guys come to camp with a clean slate and a chance to prove himself.
And he was a pretty high pick in the Maritime Hockey League draft, too. I think he went 8th overall to Grand Falls. So, I mean, that's, when you're looking at affiliate players and you'd pick up on the way to Quebec, I mean, that's what Richie said to us like a couple of weeks ago. He said, you want to have affiliate players in every region.
Yeah.
And like that
threw us for a loop.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, that's how it's done. Because we talked about the PEI where they went over there with 5 defensemen, didn't I said, can't you just sign somebody?
Yeah.
He's like, no.
Yeah.
You got to have.
There's 2 defensemen that Moncton took in this draft, too, by the way. That kind of caught my attention, and the Wildcats have talked to me about them, is Nicola Pavin in the fourth round. So these are 2 15-year-old kids that I'm talking about here. So he's 6 foot, 158 pounds. And the other kid is Charles Antoine Pilote, 6'2", 167, in the seventh round.
Yeah. Those are big kids.
15-year-olds. Once they grow into their bodies, add some muscle and weight. Wildcats have some high hopes for these two guys down the road. I mean, I don't see either of these guys making the team this coming season. But 2 seasons from now, when potentially the team could be in a rebuild, I don't think they'll be in a massive rebuild, but there will be openings two seasons from now.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Those are two guys that they have quite high hopes for.
Yeah. Who was the guy that you had the last, one of the last cuts?
So their 14th round pick, Philippe Thomason.
Yeah.
I don't, like, I'm just talking like, this is just from scouts in Quebec, but people are saying that he could be one of the last, like, challenge for a spot. And that's pretty crazy for a 14-round pick.
Yeah.
Played high school hockey in Quebec. I mean, you look at what Moncton's done with, you know, Quebec high school players, Noah Massey, and that was just a disaster.
Yeah. I mean, but, train wreck.
I mean, just, but you want to take these players in the 14th round? I'm happy with it. Don't take them in the third round.
You know what? Christian Gaudet was
prime example.
Now I'm testing my own memory. He was either an 11th or 13th round pick. I believe 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Played four seasons for the Wildcats.
Captain
of a Memorial Cup host team,
mm-hmm.
league championship team.
Mm-hmm.
One of the all-time great two-way Wildcat forwards.
Absolutely.
Shut down defensive player on the third line. There was a guy. So he's proof. He's the poster boy
mm-hmm.
in Wildcats history for the late round draft pick who really pans out and plays way above what anybody could ever have expected.
He just came to training camp and just, you couldn't cut him. Like, he just worked his ass off and just got the job. Like,
These drafts are always interesting, too, because you know what? People forget Connor Garland. He was a sixth-round pick.
Sixth round.
Now, that's different because he wasn't drafted as a sixth-round pick because of skill set or anything.
Yeah.
That was because people thought he was going to U.S. college.
Exactly.
The Wildcats took a flyer on him, took a chance, and it panned out.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, because they see the stats that the kid put up and winning two scoring titles, you would assume
first round pick.
Probably, first, second round.
Well, you redo that draft. He's a I forgot who was in his draft here, but he's got to be at least a top three pick.
Oh, for sure.
I mean,
what year was it?
Would have been the
2012, 11.
I'm thinking 2012-13 season.
God, you guys are good. 2012 draft.
Yeah.
Sixth pick, 104.
You know what? His first game, I remember.
Victoriaville.
I remember Moncton had played in Gatineau or somewhere the night before, and they were on their way to Drummond. Or they were on their way to Victoriaville, and they stopped and picked him up at the airport in Montreal. Picked him up at noon on the Friday at the airport in Montreal. Went to Victoriaville that night, and I think he had 3 points in his first game.
Yeah.
So in that draft, Sherbrooke took Daniel Audet, number one. Alex Pippen, PI, took Alex Pippen. And Cape Breton took Clark Bishop.
If you had to do it over again, Garland would be the first overall
pick. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, what are some other names on that list, like from that draft?
Oh, Jack Eichel. I don't think that's the same Jack Eichel.
It is.
Yeah.
The same Jack Eichel that's playing at Buffalo?
Yeah. He's an American.
Yeah.
Oh. He got drafted by
Halifax and then St. John, or St. John and then Halifax.
Yeah. That's impressive. Yeah, Halifax took him. Okay, well, he's the name that popped out of the screen because I didn't think it was the same one.
But he never played Q, so...
Yeah.
No, yeah.
And everything I heard, I mean, there was a better chance of me giving birth tonight than him coming and playing in the Quebec League. Everybody said he was definitely... Some guys, you never know whether they're playing the game or not.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty legit that he was definitely going U.S. college. But teams took a chance anyway.
Alexander Carrier went fourth. Locke Lavelle to Baie-Comeau.
Alexander Carrier was legit. He was a great defenseman.
Francis Perron to Rouyn-Noranda at six.
He'd be...
Francis Perron, now he finished 1-2 with Theron in scoring.
Yeah.
So he was legit.
Nicholas Aubé-Kubel.
He was
to Val-d'Or.
Yeah, he was a good player.
Matt Highmore to St. John at eight.
Yeah.
Carl Neal at nine to Val-d'Or and to round out the top 10, Gabriel Paquan Bordeaux.
Yeah, so Connor Garland's the first overall pick. Then I'd probably
Francis Perron.
Francis Perron is second.
Odette or him.
Yeah.
One of those two.
And then just quickly, Oliver LeBlanc, Nicholas Hébert, Alexander Vanier, Cody Donaghy, Jack Eichel, Anthony Richard, and Julian Ball.
Cody Suitcase. Played for about 10 teams.
Yeah. You got that right. Yeah.
If you look at the guy.
First overall in that draft.
Yeah. Look at the guys that Moncton took before. Just Moncton. Gabriel Gagne. Second round.
Yeah.
Traded.
Tanner McCabe. Josh
Pan out.
Josh Pugsley.
Didn't pan out.
No.
Steven Johnson.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Liam Hines.
No.
Nope.
Alexander Mann.
Nope.
Zachary Bodine.
Nope.
Julian Poole.
Nope. It was a pretty lean draft.
Yeah. Yep. Brings me back memories of that draft in Charlottetown with Noah Massey. Oh,
yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
So Connor Garland played with Jack Eichel for the Boston Junior Bruins.
He did.
Yeah.
How good were they?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
good exactly. Lord.
They would have been an okay team.
Yeah, I would think so. So
Eichel centering Connor Garland and whoever their left winger was.
Does it matter?
Yeah.
Nope.
Put a fire hydrant. Fire hydrant would have got assists.
Thanks again, Neil.
Oh,
this
pleasure.
Has been fantastic.
Yeah,
you're welcome anytime in the studio.
Had a lot of fun with you guys.
Anything in your notepad you didn't bring up yet that you want to talk about?
I'm just... if you want to reflect briefly, the guys that Wildcats have lost since this past season, because they've had some significant player losses, some
mm-hmm.
guys that won't be back. I mean, it all starts with Francis LeClaire in net.
Yeah.
Very good goaltender. Then you have two defensemen, Alexei Antilainen, Gabriel Silvest. That was two of their top four defensemen from this past season.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a couple of good forwards, Brady Pataki and Adam Capanelli. So there's five players right there, five good solid players that won't be back. And then you're going to have three overagers. I think we know which three. Christian Huntley, Dylan Seitz, and Charles-Antoine Jaguar. Add those three to that group. So there's going to be at least eight guys.
Plus McDonald and Kingsbury Fournier.
From this past, yeah.
I'm
thinking guys that were on the team at the end of the season, though.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
So guys that were on the playoff roster, there'll be at least at least eight players from that playoff roster that won't be back. I think the number could be more like 9 or 10
mm-hmm.
when all is said and done. I just think that if you have a choice between a 19-year-old forward, because we're talking forwards here mainly, if you have a choice between a 19-year-old forward to play in your third or fourth line, or if you can get a 17-year-old who's just as good, like Al Shorten or one of these guys, come in, do the job, and they're a couple years younger, you got to go with the younger guy.
Yeah, for sure.
I always think that your fourth line has to be basically all rookies.
Yeah.
Or young guys.
Kids learning, yeah.
Guys
in the game.
Guys that can come up through the system, pay their dues, and
mm-hmm.
take on a bigger role the following season. I don't like any team. To me, it's a bad sign if your fourth line is 3 19-year-olds or an 18-year-old and 2 19-year-olds. I think those guys got to be 16, 17-year-olds on that fourth line.
I mean, if you look at it, if I'm correct and I say Foreman, Stewart, and Al Shorter, they're all going to be 18 next year.
Yeah.
There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No.
And then you have like Francis Langlois, who's in Quebec Midget, and Alexandre Parent, who's in Quebec Midget.
Yeah. I think one of those two will make the team.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised
if not both.
Exactly.
If not both.
Right?
And that's why I say if those two guys, Parent and Langlois, both make the team, well, it looks like I'm picking on them, but how does Ozzie King stand?
Yeah.
Somebody's
mm-hmm.
to make room for these guys, which I think they need to do, then you have to move out one or two potential returning forwards.
And everything about Longwise is just like everything you want to bring to the table. Like it's just
it's high energy.
Works his
skater.
Ass off every shift. Like that's kind of what they're building towards. And I don't think you'd have a problem, playing, that 13th, 14th forward spot.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
And same with like, in that case, you'd have to rotate, the Al Shorens and them out of the lineup. But why not? Like
it's paying your dues.
Exactly.
That's as old as hockey.
Yeah.
I mean.
It's
but I think a guy like Langlois, he can do the same job that Ozzie King can do, and he's
exactly.
a couple years younger.
Yep.
So you got to go. All things equal, you go with the younger guy
mm-hmm.
who's got
for
some
sure.
upside. And let's face it, Ozzie King's not going to be here at 20 years old following season. So
fortunately for Ozzie, you can go on waivers this year.
Him.
No,
yeah,
exactly.
Whatsoever.
Nothing against him. And waivers, anything can happen. If he plays Junior A, he plays Junior A. He'd be a hell of a Junior A player.
Yeah. The one thing I really hope this season, though, I hope that, and they've got to play LaValle more
mm-hmm.
because, you know what, they did what they needed to do, and I give them full credit for going out making that big trade for Olivier Rodrigue. He's legit, should be the best goalie in the league this season, I think, no question about it. But after this season, the next season is when LaValle's got to be ready to step up as an 18-year-old third-year veteran and take that starter role. He's got to be at least have the opportunity to play 25 games this season. To prove whether he is or is not ready to be the starter as a third-year 18-year-old veteran the following season in 2021. And they shouldn't have to trade or get a free agent goaltender in here. They got to, and I think they will. I think they know that. And you know what? There's just good chance, from what I'm hearing, that Olivier Rodrigue could play for Canada at the World Championship.
I like those odds.
The World Juniors. Yep. So that's the case. He's going to play. He's going to play a bunch of games for a month right there, LaValle, while he's away at the World Juniors. So that's one thing that I hope that they do for sure, is they need to develop that young goaltender. That was probably one of the unfortunate things from this past season. I think that I think it was a sin that they didn't play that kid enough in the second half. What, do you have about 61 minutes?
Yeah, I was completely on board. Like, I'm probably his biggest fan.
Yeah.
Just because I think it was...
But the mental makeup to get into that Rimouski game and play well.
Yeah.
And playing the playoffs against Baie-Comeau.
Yeah. Like,
if there's a guy that's going to handle it, and we talked about it, we said about 48 and 20, I think, between Rodrigue and LaValle.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
That's kind of
somewhere between 20 and 25.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there was this stretch last season where there was about 6 weeks in a row where LaValle didn't play.
Yep.
And I joked with somebody and said that, you know, in the past 6 weeks, LaValle and I have played the same number of minutes for the Wildcats.
Jeremy got a hashtag going.
Had a hashtag, everything, free LaValle.
Yeah, remember that.
Oh, jeez. Like, but if Roderick, you know, makes World Juniors, that's going to really increase his playing time.
Like, yeah.
That stretch, if he's going to be gone for almost a month, if he makes the junior team, and that's probably going to be at least five games, if not more.
Yeah.
When do they usually leave?
Or
second week of December.
Yeah, December 10, 11, something like that. And they're gone right till about January.
Till January. 6, so, yeah, 7, it would 8. Be Charlottetown, St. John, Bathurst, Halifax, Cape Breton would be five games that he would get.
And then into January, if he.
That's the January 3rd and 4th. So the tournament probably ends on the 5th. Yeah. And then there isn't another game till that following Saturday. So those are probably the five games.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at the schedule, he's going to play early because he's going to probably play in that. The first week of October, they got 3 and 4 nights.
Yeah.
Gatineau, Rennes, and Val-d'Or. Yeah. So.
And Rodrigo Hall would be at training camp, too, so that's something to take into consideration as well. Like, he's probably not going to be here for the season opener.
And the Wildcats will have their new bus for the first trip.
New bus
coming.
Oh!
First road trip.
First
road trip of the
Breaking
season.
News here, Breaking folks. News. Thank we you. Well, know, that, we're going to end right there. That's it. We're done. I had one question, but I'm done. Actually, since there's a new bus... What's it like to be on a boy on the bus? Oh, I mean, how many? Do you know how many games you've seen? Oof. Off the top of your head?
Well, 68. Let's say 68 regular season. About 12.
So if you go 80 games ish.
80 playoffs. Let's say about 90 games a season on average. Some longer, some shorter. 90 times
25
seasons. God, this is going to make me feel old.
2,200.
Yeah, 2,200.
There you go.
And if you want to do it from another point of view, 24 seasons so far, and still kicking, and average of about 45,000 kilometers per season. So I don't know what that math is.
1,080,000.
Yeah, geez, I feel old. But you know what?
Being on the bus, like, what is that like with... From the highs, the lows, the winters, like
it's trying
to write your stories while you're on the bus.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of nights, tight deadlines too. When you're in Quebec covering a game, and you got the hour time change working against you, and game that starts at 7:30 in Quebec, that's 8:30 here in Atlantic Canada. Story's got to be in the paper by, let's say, 11:30, give or take. So that's a tight window at the end of the game with the time change against you. It's 8:30 Atlantic start. Game is ending at about 11:00 Atlantic time. Now you gotta be writing your story as the game is going along.
Right.
Then run down to the dressing room afterward, get some couple of quick interviews, run to the bus, add some quotes into the story that you've already been writing as the game's going. And then sometimes if it's a big win, it can be quite noisy on that bus if you're trying to focus and write a story under tight deadline conditions. And so that bus has all different. That bus is really a community of its own, and I'm sure every junior hockey bus is the same. But you know what? It can be noisy in that bus after a big win, and it can be dead quiet after a bad loss or a sour performance. Usually it's for about the first half hour after they leave a city after a good win. It can be pretty raucous in there, and then it quiets down and guys go to sleep and that. But yeah, it's a... it really is a community inside that bus, and guys are tight-knit, and you see some guys will be, everybody's doing their own thing. Some guys will be reading a book, other guys are playing cards, some guys are watching TV. In the bus, there's internet, of course, and the guys are watching TV, they're on their computers, their iPads, their phones. Some guys are doing homework, believe it or not. Not necessarily right after a game, but on the longer trips.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're traveling. When they're traveling 14, 16 hours, and it's a chance to get some homework done. And, it really hit home, you know what, two seasons ago when Humboldt Broncos, when that situation happened, not to put a downcast here, but, you know, when that happened, for a guy like me who spent a good chunk of his life traveling junior hockey buses, when that happened, I remember waking up on that Saturday morning in Blandville during the playoffs, first round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs, and upset Rimouski, that's right, second round. Mm-hmm. I just remember speechless because I was, first of all, obviously incredibly sad for the loss that that community suffered.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kept thinking about, geez, I spent over half my life traveling on a junior hockey bus, 45,000 kilometers. That could be me. That could be on any given night. That could be any given team. You hit the wrong road conditions or any number of things.
It's not like you're driving through Texas and California. Yeah. It's winter and it's.
It really made me stop and think and realize how lucky I've been to have traveled safely with that team. You know what? And I got to give credit to the Wildcats organization because I've seen it over the years. One thing I'll say about Robert Irving and the Wildcats organization, they do not take chances. When it comes to bad weather, I've seen it countless times over the years where they'll spend an extra night in the community instead of traveling. The money factor at the hotel, that's not even talked about. They'll spend the extra night. They don't take chances.
Yeah.
And that's really good to see, and I'd like to think that every team is the same. I don't know if they are, but I'd like to think that everybody, especially after what we've seen at West.
Right,
yeah.
Safety is paramount. And I know, speaking to the Wildcats bus driver, he's told me before, in the wintertime when we're in Quebec or wherever, during the second intermission of the game, he'll be on the phone with the weather station, with the local police departments, highway patrol, see what the weather conditions are like. He's doing his due diligence before the game, and it's ultimately his call at the end of the game. He'll tell the coach, we can't go because certain weather condition coming. So he's doing some research. They never get caught out on the highway in an unexpected storm. They know exactly what they're getting into, and the decision is made ahead of time.
And to give him a shout out, he is
Bernie Hache. Great guy, a true pro.
Well, like I said before, this was awesome. We thank you for giving us some of your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me aboard. I'm pretty impressed with your studio.
Thank you. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you. I'll be back.
It'll grow.
It'll grow,
we'll
yeah.
We'll have to move it to the next room there.
Yeah, exactly. fans know it. They love it.
Eric Murray Realty. Buy a house from him.
Stick tap of the week.
Not really a stick tap, but I mean, I shouldn't have to say this. Obviously, it's prom season, high school and graduation. You know, some of these kids are, the biggest night of their lives. Just don't do anything stupid. I remember my high school prom graduation. I can admit I had some beverages, but I was responsible. I had my mom come pick me up. Don't drink and drive. And, you know, if you, just stay over, call a cab, do whatever you need. You're young, you got your whole life in front of you. So just, don't do anything stupid to, put your life in jeopardy or somebody else's lives in jeopardy.
The Stick Tap of the Week, sponsored by Eric Murray Real Estate with Century 21. If you're looking to buy or sell a home in the greater Moncton and surrounding area, make sure to check out his Facebook page or give him a call at 506-863-8802.
I remember when I graduated, we had what was called the Safe Grad.
We had that too, yeah.
After we graduated, we all went to a farm in cattle pens and got absolutely hammered.
And I wouldn't call that safe grad around
that's,
here.
No, but that was our safe grad in Little Hannah, Alberta, and it was every year. So the grade 11 parents would work it. So the grade 12 parents that went through everything, they get the night off. The grade 11 parents would work it. You bring your beer, it was in a trailer. The grade 11 parents would give you, you could only take it one case of beer or 1 2-4. And they would hand it out. And at the end of the night, everyone would get in the school buses. They'd take you home. Your parents had to get up, whether it was 2 a.m., 5 a.m., check you off, like check it off, sign you on. Like, it, and I come out here and I find out that that's not what SafeGrad is out here.
Yeah, my SafeGrad was at, my SafeGrad was at SEPS at U to M. And basically, we were there till 6 o'clock in the morning, and they had inflatable jumpy toys. We can go in the pool. They had the tennis courts open. They had the gym open. You can go work out. That was our SafeGrad. You know, they had a theater set up. We can go watch a movie. Literally, you could do anything you wanted inside SEPS.
Except drink.
Until 6 o'clock in the morning, the buses brought you back to the school. Your parents pick you up. You know, you go home and you sleep the rest of the day.
Wow. You know what? I can remember that Sebastian Roger scored 53 goals in 1997-98, and I can't remember my grand. That's pretty sad. I'm feeling kind of depressed here.
Oh, that's funny. All right, that'll do it for us. Again, guys, we'll be back next week for Season 3 finale. It will be an episode you do not want to miss. We have a very special guest lined up, so stay locked on our social medias. We'll have a few clues. Again, thank you, Neil. Check out roadstoseatours.com if you guys want to visit this amazing province this summer.
Roads to Sea Tours, offering a one-of-a-kind experience in the province of New Brunswick. Their coastal tour is a one-of-a-kind tour in Canada, where guests experience the dramatic rise and fall of the world's highest tides in the Bay of Fundy. You can reach them online at roadstoseatours.com or toll-free at 1-877-850-7623.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Moncton Wildcast Podcast. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search Moncton Wildcast.